Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to our first Behind Our Eyes book fair. I am Bonnie Bloth, one of the hosts for this afternoon. I am the vice president of Behind Our Eyes, the writers group, and also program committee chair. Sharing hostess responsibilities and duties with me today is a familiar name to all of us, our former president, Marilyn Brandt Smith. Marilyn is a former president, as I said, and as well serves on the program committee and is web liaison. She will be preparing the conference and the recording of this book fair for posting on our website. But before we begin, and that, of course, will happen after we finish today, but before we begin, let me say just a few other things about what we hope to accomplish today and what we hope you will benefit in hearing. We both hope that you'll enjoy tonight's meeting, of course, or this afternoon's meeting. It will go into early evening, so I guess tonight is a little bit appropriate. We hope you'll find some books that you'll want to read or that you'll find some that you want to recommend to friends. We want to tell you also that there will be information for you to be able to purchase them as gifts or perhaps put them on your own wish list if you wish to do that. You'll have a chance to meet some new people and fellow writers. And, of course, we always hope that for anyone who listens to this recording or is here as a participant or and not a member of the Behind Our Eyes group, that you will consider becoming a member of our organization, Behind Our Eyes. If you want to join us, you'll find a membership form on behindoureyes.org, which is our website. A little bit about each presentation before we begin. Each will last for 10 minutes. The author may in that time take questions if they wish, and I will give a two-minute warning so that they know that it's time to wrap up. I am really happy to have all of you here, and I'm glad that you've had the time and opportunity to join us today. And I'll now turn the festivities over to Marilyn Brandt Smith. And if
you have
any questions for either of us before we begin, you can ask anything that about anything I've said or anything Marilyn says before we begin with the first presentation. Now I'll turn it over to you, Marilyn. Sorry.
Thank you. I want to tell people who may not be familiar with Behind Our Eyes a little bit about us. Obviously, we are a writers group because we're holding this first book fair. We are an organization of writers with disabilities. We were founded in 2006. Two of our anthologies, our collected work, prose, poetry, fiction, are available on BARD. The first one is Behind Our Eyes. The second one is Behind Our Eyes, A Second Look. And we are working on our third one, Behind Our Eyes, A Literary Sunburst. It should be up next year, we hope. And we have a magazine, Magnets and Ladders, where once again we publish our work, but we also can publish your work. You don't have to be a member to participate in our Magnets and Ladders magazine. You need to go to magnetsandladders.org and read the submission guidelines and then read our magazine. Our fall and winter has just come out, and you can see if your work looks something like ours and you think it would fit in. Our organization offers many opportunities for critiquing each other's work in a meaningful way. We also have an opportunity in a reader's workshop for people to practice read before doing those public presentations. We're not quite sure how to make the paperwork right or the braille thing work right. It's a good chance to get a little entertainment in as well. See how your pieces go over with an audience. We have a low traffic list, where we network with other authors about our work. We post articles, blog information, publicity releases. And then probably the star of our program is our Sunday night meetings. First and third Sundays of each month, we have a meeting at 8 Eastern. And we have speakers from outside the group. We recently had a firefighter who had a new novel he'd been working on for 10 years. And he read from it and told us about working on it. All the challenges of deciding who to let publish and all that. We have had podcast writers. Sometimes we work within our own group, people who've had special opportunities with a publisher, and talk about, we get a panel together. We also devote part of that time to planning what we're going to be doing in the organization and to critiques. So I've given you the information about going to magnetsandladders.org to read the magazine and or going to behindoureyes.org to get the form for a membership or the form to ask us more questions. Up on that website, we also have a 10th anniversary celebration recording, which you can download and read. And 27 of us read our own material. And then we talk about a history with clips from some of our previous phone conferences. So you sort of see the organization develop. I'm going to give you a phone number in case that is easier for you than accessing a website or bringing down a link. And this is a phone number where we usually have a recording of our most recent Magnets and Ladders. We are waiting for Perkins to get the fall-winter one read. Perkins reads and distributes it for us in human voices, and that's very nice. And as soon as we have that, it will be up there. But that phone number is still available to leave a message if you have a question or a comment about anything you've heard here. 773-572-7744. And please share this information so that others can listen to us talk about our books, and perhaps you'll find something for someone who needs just that special book to make their fall complete. Is there anything I need to cover before we go right into our first presentation? All right, let's begin with Alice Massa. She was president of our organization from 2014 to 16, and she has a book called The Christmas Carriage and Other Writings of the Holiday Seasons that she's going to share with us.
Thank you, Marilyn, and thank you, Bonnie, and everyone. Welcome to our Behind Our Eyes book fair that I will tell you, we know that book dreams do come true. And I want to share with you my book dream that came true through the publication of my book, as Marilyn said, The Christmas Carriage and Other Writings of the Holiday Season. Right now, I want to ask you, with your imagination and your memories, to join me on a Christmas carriage ride so that I can tell you a little more about my holiday book. First, I want you to know that besides being available in print and in an ebook format, my book is also available in Braille and as an audio download from Bard, Braille and Audio Reading Download, as DBC08305. My 101-page book has a very festive cover with Christmas red and green print on a white border, and then in the middle is a large photograph taken by professional photographer Cindy Leskey. This photo includes a horse-drawn carriage and is on a street here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, on a snowy day. And that goes right along with the title short story of my book collection. The horse just happens to have a star blaze, and the star does have some significance in my title story, The Christmas Carriage. And my book, I hope that you will find, with its 6 by 9 inch dimensions and a sturdy paperback, is really a beautiful little book for gift giving. Since Thanksgiving is not too far away, and since some of you may want to purchase a hostess gift or another little gift for someone during the Thanksgiving season, I want you to know that my book actually begins with a section of Thanksgiving pieces. After the introductory essay, Writing Through the Snow, the first piece, Thanksgiving Vignettes, is about my family's celebration of Thanksgiving in the 1950s and 1960s in a small rural town in Indiana. After you read about my Italian-American family's celebration of Thanksgiving, the second piece is one of 5 short stories in my collection. This first one is entitled The Thanksgiving Phone and focuses on a military family whose son comes home from the Air Force on Thanksgiving night. Now, are you ready for a change in your Thanksgiving celebration? Want less of that football? Well, read my next piece and put it to work in your Thanksgiving celebration. It's a how-to piece entitled The Thanksgiving Poetry Game. After that Thanksgiving section, we move on in the book to 9 pieces that are Christmas pieces. And the first is Leader Dog Zoe Visits the U.S. Capitol Christmas Tree. And this took place exactly 5 years ago today. And after you read about our adventure of going to find this 88-foot spruce that was 88 years old and on its way to Washington, D.C., you will read another memoir about my family's celebration of the holidays. This one is entitled The Magic and Wonder of the First Weekend in December. And I relay stories from the Christmas dances in our small town to Christmas decorating, from the Land of Oz to Santa Claus Land. And after you read that piece about even my meeting the real Santa Claus, you will move on to an article that is a combination how-to and memoir. And this piece is about making Christmas cards of your own and also keeping a Christmas memory of the best gift ever. After you find out that my best gift was a little puppy, then you'll move on to a story poem, one of the longer poems that I've ever written, and it's entitled Zoe's Christmas Eve. I'm going to take just a few seconds here to share with you just the first few lines of this poem. My gift to you is a story to share. From my telling to your telling, it will go everywhere, like season's greetings, good cheer, and a smile, Christmas hope, and warm wishes. This story should last for a while. Now, to the point of this tiny tale. Dear Rudolph entered with a loud ka-choo. Instead of red, his nose was purple and blue. Santa was startled, but asked with dismay, "What in the world happened to you today?" "The story is simple. A flu bug did bite. Not just Rudy's nose, but Santa's whole flight." Well, to hear the end of this story poem, you will need to read my book. Now, as we go on from that fanciful poem to another poem that was once in my 2000 Christmas card, and then after that, it is time for the title story, The Christmas Carriage. And this story was inspired by a student of mine who told me how she so longed to go on a carriage ride in downtown Milwaukee. And I thought of that for many years before I formulated this story. And it was also inspired because the clippity-clop and the jingle bells of the Christmas carriage so frequently went by my townhouse here in Milwaukee. After that, we have a very short poem, Acrostic Christmas Gift. And then it's time for the final short story of the Christmas section of my book, A Sign of Peace at Cocoa with the Clauses. Now, Cocoa with the Clauses is an actual event in the park that is Catty Corner from where I live. But also in this short story, Cocoa.
You have 2 minutes, Alice.
Name of the main character, and he is a homeless person. After that, we have another essay that is about homelessness and my meeting a homeless person at a church. The post-Christmas story, Blissful Bells, is about a wedding and then a second wedding on December 30th. Of course, every holiday book should have a New Year's Eve story also, and mine is The Puppies of New Year's Eve. My book concludes with three pieces that I call January pieces, a humorous essay, a humorous poem entitled A Snowflake Garden, and then a poem that you could read to your own children or other children entitled Snow Dancers. I thank you for considering my book on your Christmas wish list or on your Christmas shopping list. And if you want to find out more about this book and my writings and my contact information, I'll give you one of various sources. http://www.dldbooks.com/, and then my name, Alice Massa /, and my last name is spelled just like the first five letters of Massachusetts. And I want to end with this thought. I now, that this Christmas carriage ride has come to an end, I do hope that you will very much enjoy the other nine authors who will share their book dreams that have also come true. Happy holidays, everyone, and thank you for listening.
Thank you, Alice. That's a wonderful presentation. Our next presenter is Peter Altschul, and he has two books to tell us about.
Thank you, Behind Our Eyes. Thank you, Bonnie and your sister, for putting this together. The most important thing I want to say to you is my website, which gives you everything you want to know about my two books and a few other things. If you have any questions, that's the best place to go. And that is www.myname.com. Now, my name is not my name. It's actually peteraltschul.com, which is P-E-T-E-R-A-L-T, as in Tom, S-C-H-U-L.com. peteralschul.com. On that site, you will find information about both my books. You will also find some of the music I've written, some of the essays I've written. You also will find a link to my blog posts and a log to my Twitter feed. I'm a huge Twitter fan. To talk about my books a little bit, back in 2004-5, I was training to get my fifth guide dog named Jules. And back then, there was no such thing as blogs. So every day at the school, I would send emails to all my friends and colleagues and just let them know what I was doing every day. And when I got home, I got a response from like 10 different people saying, you should write a book based on this. And I thought they were nuts. But I ended up moving to Columbia, Missouri from Washington, D.C., and miraculously getting into a nonfiction writing course for PhD students, even though I had never taken a creative writing course before and never written anything except for work-related stuff. So I thought, okay, maybe I really need to write this book. So I did write the book, Breaking Barriers, Working, Loving While Blind, over a five-year period. And the book is focused around that time when I was getting my dog, Jules, at Guiding Eyes for the Blind. And at around the same time, my stepmom died. And so there was a lot going on in my life around that time. So the book talks about that. But it also talks about my interest in organization behavior. It also talks about my background as a musician. And it also talks about the funeral of my stepmom and getting a new dog through that process and me doing the funeral speech and all of that stuff. And when I had my original thought was the book would end on my return to Washington, D.C., thinking, okay, I've had something's happened, but something is missing, and I was going to leave it at that. But then I ended up thinking, well, no, I really shouldn't end it there. So I write about how I moved to Columbia, Missouri to marry my wife, Lisa, and the book ends on the wedding day, which was quite adventurous and quite humorous and so on and so forth. And the book ends right after the wedding ceremony. The book was published, and it's published by iUniverse. And when it came time to publicizing the book, I asked my publicist, what should I do to publicize the book? She said, the first thing you need to do is to write a blog. And I said, okay, that's okay. What should I write about? She said, anything you want to. But, she said, you need to keep your blog post under 750 words. And I thought, okay, I can do that. And to me, that's been the best advice I got from the publicist for a variety of reasons. One of the reasons being that a lot of the blogs I see, I think, are just way too long. But the other thing is I made an effort to write a blog a week for the next few years, 5 years. And then I was thinking about, okay, what should I write about my second book? And then I realized I had a lot of good material that I could just put together in a book. And so that's what I did. I used the greatest hits, if you will, of my blog posts and put them together to form the second book, which was published in 2017 by iUniverse. And that book is titled Breaking It Down and Connecting the Dots, Creating Common Ground Where Contention Rules. And the book is divided into 9 parts because the blog sort of fell into 9 different categories. I'm not going to go through all the parts, but there's a section, for example, on how we influence each other. And I write about some of my experiences raising 3 stepkids, for example, and my experience swimming with dolphins and how that influenced me. And there are a few other things like that. And then I write about my interest in workplace behavior around issues of employment and workplace diversity and leadership, what leadership is and what it is not. I write a little bit about politics, but that was right around the time when President Trump was being elected, so I wrote some essays about that. I write about my interest in sports. I write about my interest in music. A lot of my background has been in the area of trying to help people find common ground, hence the subtitle of the book. And so I write a section on what I call rhetorical rabbit holes, which sort of talks about the various things we use to make it hard for us to communicate across those difficult conversations and what we can do to prevent those from happening. And then I write about Christianity and my experience with that topic. And Alice is talking about peace. My last topic, my last essay in the book is called Peace. And I won't go into great detail except to say that one of the things that I found kind of interesting was I've heard lots of sermons about how important peace is, but I never heard peace defined. You know, what is peace anyway? So I made an effort to try to write it what I thought peace was and was not. That's how the book ends. Both books are available, as Alice's are, through Bard. I don't have the numbers, unfortunately. They're also available through Bookshare. You can go on there and do a search for that. And they're also available through my website as a soft cover book and ebooks. So these are books that the first book is a memoir, and the way I look at it is it's a story. I tell a story, a lot of action in that book. And there's some reflection, but it's mostly the story of my life, going back and forth from my experience getting that guide dog at Guiding Eyes named Jules. And my second book, Breaking It Down and Connecting the Dots, is really my thoughts on a variety of subjects. There is action there, but it's more about thoughts. And again, each thought or each essay is 750 words or less. So, of course, it is the holidays, and I encourage you to buy these books either for yourself or for a friend who's interested in good memoir writing and or good, concise essays about a variety of topics. You know, I have a variety of interests, and so I write about them all. So I think that's really about all I want to say about the two books. If there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them. If there are not any questions, I'll turn the floor over.
You have about 2.5 minutes left.
Any questions? Okay, we will move right along.
And we'll move along. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Peter. That was excellent. You and Alice are both very precise.
Yeah. Our next presenter is Joan Miles. She is on our board as a member at large, and she is the one that brought to us the idea of a reader's workshop, sort of an open mic for people to practice all the things of juggling Braille pages or getting their other devices to work in sync, parroting what they hear through a headphone, et cetera, et cetera. But right now she is focusing on her new book that came out this year, One with Willows. So Joan, tell us about it.
Thank you very much, Marilyn, and thank you, Bonnie, and thank you, everyone, for being here. Yes, my book is called One with Willows, and it's a little book. It contains 48 poems, and they're what I like to call spiritually playful poetry. Poetry is not just what I do. It's how the world speaks to me. It speaks to me lyrically, in pictures of heart, or in whispers of spirit, in throbbings of connection. And these are the words that I try to configure on the page. These spiritual flutterings that each of us experience as we go through days, these little whispers that we find in silence, in moments of togetherness with friends, or maybe just in our aloneness. And if I succeed in the way I configure these words, then I'm able to bring readers along on this little footpath that I try to create, this little footpath into some kind of a delightful experience where the world is revealing itself kind of mystically or magically, because the world is more than what we experience through our senses. It's got shimmering that we can even see beyond our blindness. So that's what I try to configure. And this little book, One with Willows, it's 111 pages, 48 poems, as I said, focuses on little experiences in my life. So some of the topics are things in your life, too, like shoes, the shoes in your closet. I was considering those one day, and a poem came to me. And there are other moments, like sitting with your grandchild at the piano, having him invite you to come and sit beside him. That's a very magical moment, and it needs to be captured in words that we can share. So this little childlike essence that I try to find in each of my experiences is what I hope the reader will discover, that little innocent essence that we all bring to life. Words are very magical, and life is a wondrous experience, and we need to stop and breathe and just experience the wonder that comes to us if we are receptive. So it's this childlike wonder and this spiritual seeking that I try to bring into my writing. Here's one example that comes early in the book. It's called Awake. Awake, sweet child. Wake to wonder, wake to wander, where only love abides, where darkness never hides, but will reveal what is real. So here you have a glimpse into the possibilities of mystical experience, of magical experience. That little touch of divinity that walks with us through our days, if we'll only take a moment and listen to the birds, feel the wind, listen to the leaves on the trees, see the glint of light and how it changes through the seasons. These are all possibilities for us to experience the wonder of the world. And that's what I try to bring into my writing. That's what you can experience even beyond reading this little book, if you just take a moment to listen. I've been fortunate that other people have found my book to be a source of comfort. A young veteran told me that he recommends my book to other veterans because he has found it so comforting. Imagine that this little book could bring something to a patriot, a veteran who has seen war, and I was so humbled by that knowledge. Two of my poems have been included in a Holocaust remembrance event at a local synagogue here in Salem, Oregon, because they speak of hope. That, too, was just such a wondrous experience for me to hear them read among all these other readings. So I hope that this little book can bring something to you. It can be found at Amazon in print or as an e-book. And you can learn about it on my blog, which is called Juniquely Myself, JEWNIQUELYMYSELF.com. And you'll find my other writings there too. Like I said, this book is just a glimpse into what is possible. And hopefully it will be a little footpath to you. To every reader who was willing to sit down and listen to life, listen to the possible, listen to what is beyond the distinctions of physical sensation, listening to heart and spirit and the whisperings of the human heart. So there you go. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's great, Joan.
You have 3 minutes for questions if anyone has any.
Any questions?
Joan, I have one if no one else does, since we have a little time.
I am interested,
this is Bonnie again, and I'm interested in the fact that as a person who lives in a rather large city, you're connected with yourself spiritually, but also part of that connection, I feel, is being connected with listening to nature and listening to what's going on around you. How does being in an urban setting play into the aspect of listening and really noticing the little things? And I believe in the awe and wonder of childhood. I believe you can take that into adulthood. Could you talk about that a little bit, if you would, please?
Sure. It's all about silence and looking into oneself. And by that, I don't mean being self-centered. I mean listening to the silence. You can do that, you can do that in a room that's closed. You can experience nature. If you can't get right up close to it in a garden, you can open a window and just feel the air, because every day the air is different. I mean, today it was foggy and misty here, and, you know, tomorrow there could be sunlight pouring through the window. These are things you don't even have to see with your eyes. You can glimpse beyond that. And you're right, the awe of our experiences is what speaks, you know, and reveals that inner childlike essence, that wonder that we can bring into our lives.
Thank you.
I have a question also. Joan, there's one of your poems in the book that, as you know, has meant so much to my sister and her daughter-in-law, one of her daughters-in-law, and the sister of the daughter-in-law and mothers at the preschool where my sister teaches. One of your poems very much touches mothers who have three children, and your poem addresses that so well. Can you tell everyone the title of that poem?
Thank you, Alice. The poem is called Juggling, because when I was expecting our third child, I asked my mother-in-law what it was like to have three children. She had six children, and she said, well, it's like juggling. And so that's how the poem starts, that it's about juggling, one for me, one for the father, and one child is always up in the air, flying somewhere. And it speaks to other aspects of reality, though. It goes deeper even than that. So thank you, Alice, for mentioning that. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All kinds of good reasons to read
Wonderful.
Joan's book.
Thank you.
Okay, our next presenter is Ann Harrison Barnes, and her book is Inner Vision, An Electric and Eclectic Book. Tell us about that, Ann.
Okay, thanks, Marilyn. I had to come back in because my phone dropped the call. Anyway, but I do want to say thanks for having me on this call, and thank everyone for listening and joining in. And first of all, I want to explain what Electric Eclectic is. And I don't work with them anymore. I'm going to be changing some things about those short reads that I've published in the near future. But Electric Eclectic is a brand of books. It's short reads. They're between 7 and 20,000 books, although now the length has actually changed. Before I left the group, they were talking about changing the length of the book. But so anyway, at the time I was publishing, it was 7 to 20,000 words, and this one is about 10,000. So let me leave you guys with a quote. The past is but a whirlwind of memories. There are those you want to capture and those you want to forget. Hold on to the precious ones and let the rest spin away in the abyss. Okay. So the book starts out with my character, Kelly Dobson. She wakes up in this really strange hospital. It's more like a hotel than a traditional medical facility. And when she wakes up, the nurse tells her that she has been in some sort of operation. But here's the thing. When her doctor, Mark Andrews, looks at her files, she can't tell anything about an operation. There's no reason for it. There's no wounds, or the only thing that Kelly suffers from is a headache, which in turn, when she falls asleep, she dreams about being carried away in a whirlwind and experiencing memories that she'd better forget. And what are these memories? It's about an accident she had 5 years previous to the time that the book was set, where she lost her sight. And due to the fact that she lost her vision, she ended up with Charles Bonnet syndrome. Now, I don't know how many of you are familiar with that, but in this book, Kelly has pictures, sometimes of birds, of lakes, of forests. And she, before she found herself in this hospital, she saw a lake off of a cliff near her house. And so she was going to follow that. And she had gotten minor injuries, but I don't want to spoil too much, but I will say this much. After she is released from the hospital, and as she and her doctor are trying to figure out what she's even doing there, her doctor finds out about the Charles Bonnet syndrome, and they have a talk before she leaves. But then after she is released, she starts using her Charles Bonnet syndrome, turning the pictures that she sees from within into artwork. Because before she lost her sight, she was an artist. And she publishes a book of children, a children's book, with different artworks and a story. And her friend Anna, who was with her at the time the accident happened, she appears on the scene after this book is published. So she ends up taking Kelly back to the area where the accident took place. I'm not going to tell you what happened and how she overcame her fear of her vision loss and the paralyzing memories of the accident. But I will tell you this, that she and her friend Anna decide to work together. Anna's a writer. She's an artist. But there is a setback. Her mother is very proud of her for following the gifts that God has given her. But her dad does not believe that she has these talents. She makes him a card for his birthday, but he thinks someone else did it. I'm not going to tell you how the conflict was resolved because I don't want to spoil the book too much for you. I would love for you guys to get this book and not only read it for yourselves, but share it with your families and put this book on your shopping list, because I'm telling you now, there's a bit of mystery, a bit of, you know, the family dynamic. And then there's a little hint of romance at the end. So I'm going to give you the link to where you can purchase the book on a variety of ebook sources, and I'll leave you with a suggestion too. But the link is books2read.com/u/b(P)J=Jupiter(Y)=Yankee. That's books2read.com/u/b(P)J=Jupiter(Y)=Yankee. And the reason I use this book is that way you guys can find, or anybody can find the book at your favorite online retailer. I not only published it on Amazon as an ebook, but also published it on Smashwords, which distributes it to other retailers. So this way you can find it at whatever retailer you want to go and read it from, whether it's through the Smashwords link, whether it's through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, whatever, you can read it from there. And I want to make one quick suggestion for authors who publish through Smashwords. If you sign up for an account at books2read.com, you can place a link to your book on the site under your profile, and it will create your universal link for you, and it will tell you what stores it funds your book at. So, and if you have any other external links you want to add to it, you can do those manually, but usually it puts all of those in there. Excuse me, in there automatically once it finds your book. So that's where you can get the book, Inner Vision, an Electric Eclectic Book. And I also want to give you guys, if I may, the link to my website. It is ANNWRIT as in Tango, E as in Echo, S as in Sierra, inspiration.com if you want to find out about my other books and learn more about me and visit my blog and such. So I hope that you guys can put Inner Vision on your shopping list and share it with your friends and family, and also put that on your wish list for others to buy for you. So I want to say thank you so much to Bonnie and Marilyn for putting on this presentation, and thanks for having me. I'm going to leave the floor open for questions if anyone has any. If not, I'll turn it back over.
You have about 3 minutes left. If anyone has questions or would like to know about any of her other books, we can talk about those. Or she can. I can. She can.
Anne, is books to read with the word T-O or the numeral 2 in the middle?
The number 2.
Thank you.
It will make you, it will make your marketing a lot easier. Trust me, when I do my social media marketing, now that I have discovered that, I can put a link to my book, and people can find it anywhere. I've gotten sales through Amazon and other retailers through that. Actually, they're owned by a company called Draft 2 Digital with the number 2 in it.
Hmm.
Okay,
any other questions?
It's amazing what the shortcuts we take with texting and all of that has done to our titling and presentation of our own material, because it's what people expect now, and it is a shortcut. Okay, let us move to Carrie Hooper, who has a new book, and it is called My Life in My Words. Go ahead, Carrie.
Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Marilyn. Thank you, Bonnie. And thank you to Behind Our Eyes for giving me the opportunity to participate in this book fair. My Life in My Words is my second book of poetry and contains poems I wrote between 2010 and 2018. These poems explore life experiences as well as my thoughts on a variety of other topics. I think of my poems as verbal photographs. The book has 67 poems. The cover has a photo of me playing my friend's grand piano, and the About the Author page has a photo of me playing my friend's pump organ. The book is divided into 6 sections: Thoughts on Faith, Huntsville, Alabama, My Second Home, Life Experiences, Connecting with Nature, Holiday Memories and Reflections, and Miscellaneous Musings. In Thoughts on Faith, I reflect on my religious beliefs. Huntsville, Alabama, My Second Home, features poems inspired by visits with my friends Tim Hendel and Deborah Saylor, who live in Huntsville, Alabama. Life Experiences treats topics as diverse as Evensong at King's College in Cambridge, England, and a ride on a children's train at a local ice cream store. Connecting with Nature has poems about a cardinal, the falling rain, spring, and other aspects of nature. In Holiday Memories and Reflections, I share poems about Thanksgiving and Christmas. Miscellaneous Musings covers such topics as making peace, celebrity worship, and the use of words. I am grateful to my friend Tim, who suggested the title for my book. At first, it was called Poetic Living, but Tim felt that that title sounded more like the title of a college textbook about how to appreciate poetry. Therefore, he suggested the title My Life in My Words, which more accurately reflects the content of the book. Indeed, the poems come from my life. I am thankful to my friends David Lennington and Sandy Schmidt, who edited my book. David formatted it for publication, and I appreciate that very much. I published my book on Lulu.com in June of 2019. My Life in My Words is available as a paperback and ebook from several sources, and I will give you just one or two links. You can get it for $20 at lulu.com. That's lulu.com. And you can also get it as a paperback and ebook from amazon.com. And so now I'd like to share a couple of poems from the book. The first one I'm going to read is called Jane's Cakes. Now, Jane is a friend from Tim and Debbie's church in Huntsville, Alabama. And when I visit Huntsville, Jane often brings a cake. So here is Jane's Cakes. Pillow softness caresses our taste buds. Lemon sweetness and chocolate goodness flavor an afternoon. Many are the moments that have been decorated by one of Jane's cakes. And now I will read a poem inspired by my visit to Madame Tussaud's Wax Museum in London. So this is called At Madame Tussaud's Wax Museum. I feel the waxy replicas of human skin. I touch the clothing of movie stars and other prominent people. These figures are more than wax sculptures. They are works of living art. And finally, I'd like to present a poem called A Heaven for Lost Things. Sometimes I wonder if there is a heaven for lost things, such as the socks that disappear in the washer, or mummy's glasses that walk away, or the paperwork that shuffles off to who knows where. If such a place exists, I would like to visit it. Who knows what treasures I might find there? I would like to thank all of you for listening to my presentation, and I encourage you to purchase my book, My Life in My Words.
Okay, thank you. You have almost 4 minutes left for questions.
Yes, if anyone has questions, I will take them now.
Well, it sounds like you have a very nice book to offer.
Well, thank you.
Okay, let's go on to Deborah Kendrick. Many of us have been reading Deborah's work in magazines and newspapers over the years, sort of a disability specialist, if you will, and I have not heard a thing about her new book, so it's a complete surprise to me. You get to share it with all of us, Deborah.
It's a secret. I wondered about that. I thought, I don't think I've told Marilyn or Bonnie what my book is. So
no.
thank you very much for allowing me to be a part of this. It's a very nice event. So early in my writing career, one of my first sort of shameful gigs was to write a story or two a week for this little throwaway newspaper that was really advertising. They have them all over the country, and it would be thrown up on people's porches and driveways, and the idea was to fill it with paid advertising, but you had to have a couple stories. So my job was to find stories that were in some way relevant to the communities in which these things were distributed. And so I wrote these dumb stories for $25 a pop, and I had such a good time, and it was such a good training ground. But I remember that, you know, friends would ask me, how are you going to find ideas? And I said, if you're a writer, all you need to do is live in the world. Ideas are everywhere. And I'm sure that's true for all of you, and it has continued to be true for me. And really, the only problem is that life is too short to write about all the things that occur to us. My book that I'm going to tell you about is the result of something in my life that I certainly didn't plan, but I have had, as some of you know, a lot of complicated surgeries and medical situations that have stretched over the last few years. And one thing that occurred to me again and again and again and again, these things all involve my leg, but every medical professional that I encountered, from doctors to nursing aides to physical therapists to occupational therapists, the first question is, so how much can you see? And it, like so many things that I've written over the years, I realized that I learned a fair amount in kind of winging it and figuring out how to minimize that sort of thing and stick to the business at hand and get through medical situations in a lot of ways. And I wanted to write about what I learned to share with others, not write about me, but write about the process of navigating healthcare. So I had a conversation about books and writing in general with the editor at National Braille Press earlier this year, and she said, I think you need to write that book. So the next thing I knew, I had a contract and I was writing a book, and the book is called Navigating Healthcare When All They Can See Is That You Can't. It's divided into an introduction and 8 chapters. It again, this is not a book about me. There's a small sprinkling of anecdotes that come from my life because they illustrate a point. But rather, it's sort of a how-to guide for navigating healthcare. It's divided into 8 chapters, as I said, so there's a chapter on at the doctor's office, selecting a doctor and building a relationship, and a chapter on outpatient clinics and walk-in clinics, a chapter on emergency situations, hospital stays, short-term rehab stays. There's a chapter for blind parents and grandparents, ways to get the attention and the results that you deserve and desire when you are the caregiver for another person in a medical situation. And chapter on using technology. You know, National Braille Press publishes a lot of books about technology, and I didn't want this to be a book about technology because I wanted it to be a book that could be useful and that people could read before having a medical situation and get ideas of how to adapt the things that I say to be useful in their own lives. But there is a fair amount of technology that can be useful in medical situations, so I devoted a chapter to that, and a chapter on managing medications, and then sort of a philosophical small chapter at the end about knowing when. It's a small book. It's one Braille volume. And as is the case with all National Braille Press books, it is also available in a number of electronic formats so that you don't have to be a blind Braille reader to read it. It's available in Microsoft Word and BRF and DAISY and I think a couple of other formats. You can, and again, as is the case with all NBP books, you can download if you're purchasing an electronic version or have it sent to you on a USB thumb drive. One of the most wonderful things, I wrote this book for blind people. I thought of it as writing it for all my blind friends everywhere in the hope of minimizing what can be really, really, being in the healthcare situation is stressful no matter who you are. And if all they can see is that you can't, it becomes even more stressful. And so my aim is to help minimize that. But one of the most wonderful things that came out of it is that my editor at National Braille Press, when we were finished, she wrote me a note and said, as soon as this book is published, I am sending a copy to my doctor. Doctors everywhere need to read this book. So that was pretty cool because I hadn't thought about that, but now that she thought of it, I like the idea a lot. So I thought I would read a little bit from the introduction. And I hope this doesn't get me kicked out of the nest. The book is in production now, but you can't buy it yet, and that's why there hasn't been any promotion from National Braille Press. I called her the other day, told her I was doing this, and she said it will be available by or before December 15th. So so here's a little bit from the introduction. Navigating our crazy and complicated healthcare system is essential for anyone interested in remaining healthy. If you happen to be blind, chances are you are familiar with the augmented chord frequently played in the healthcare sonata, whether you are in the minute clinic line for a flu shot, your primary care physician's office for a wellness checkup, orthopedic center for the pre-op education prior to knee replacement, your vision, or lack thereof, is likely to get attention. The recognition comes in a variety of forms. The receptionist, pushing papers at you across the counter, might stammer, "Can you take these home to your caregiver to help you fill them out?" Or, showing an imagined degree of sophistication, the more innocuous, "Are you able to sign your name?" Sometimes it's almost funny, or would be, maybe, if you were hearing about it rather than in a starring role, when a well-meaning medical assistant or other purveyor of clipboard squats down in front of you and shouts, because blindness, of course, means you can't hear well, something like, "Are you possibly pregnant?" Or, "Do you know when you had your last bowel movement?" From technicians who try to help us take off our clothes in the dressing room to doctors who shine lights in our prosthetic eyes, we have all dealt with the phenomenon at one point or another. Whether you are seeking treatment for a skin rash or lower back pain, if you show up with a white cane or guide dog, a perception of your lack of commonplace abilities just might prevail. Even if assumptions diminishing your basic common sense are not in the mix, just how much can you see will probably make an appearance early in the conversation. Sometimes, of course, how much sight you have is relevant. More often than not, the misconception by others of what that degree of vision really means runs the risk of interfering with your primary goal, staying healthy. This is not a book about Obamacare or Medicare or any other sort of medical insurance. It is not a manual on choosing healthcare coverage plans. It is rather a look at how best to navigate those healthcare situations when all they can see is that you can't. Sometimes just having a picture in your mind ahead of time can make a positive difference. There are over 11,000 walk-in clinics in the United States and over 6,000 hospitals. According to Wikipedia, there were 36,510,000 hospital admissions in 2018 and a whopping I always have to struggle over this number. I haven't had to say it out loud. Anyway, it's 1 trillion and a whole bunch just racked up in U.S. hospital expenses. And yet, each of us has heard or experienced at least one example of miscommunication leading to misdiagnosis in a medical situation. When should you call 911? Or, for that matter, from where can you call 911? When should you go to the emergency room? And when would an urgent care be the most economical and appropriate place to go for help? How can you get detailed information about that prescription your doctor wrote for you? And, for that matter, how can you keep track of when to take those pills? These are questions
Deborah,
that everyone...
you're going to have to wrap it up.
Okay, these are questions that everyone has who wants to be healthy should give some consideration. So I will just say that, as most of you are probably familiar with, the source for the book, National Braille Press, the website is www.nbp.org. The price is going to be between $12 and $14, she wasn't sure yet, because it's based on page count, but it will be one Braille volume and in all of the formats that I mentioned. And, I think that's everything. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I know in my experience, Deborah, just a little comment, I was amazed when I broke my shoulder how many people, physical therapists, when they were working with me, there was one in particular who simply could not figure out when she was having me go from one machine to another, which was her right or my left or her left. Did you encounter that?
Yep. Oh, yeah. I talk about a lot of that sort of thing, how to communicate and how it's easy to get angry because you need what you're there for, and they're so confused by blindness that sometimes your needs are not met. And so over time, in so many experiences, I've found ways to kind of cut to the chase without losing your temper or without making anyone, you know, building relationships while you're doing it. And, humor helps a great deal. And there are a lot of things that I talk about in the book, but, oh, so many outrageous things have happened to me and to others who I talked to when I was writing the book. So,
it seems to me like this would be a good book to be part of a training program for auxiliary therapists, like physical therapists, OTs, nurses. Do you know if that's in the works? Has anybody thought of
that?
Well,
that's the other thing that the NBP editor suggested to me just earlier this week. I called her, I just got out of the hospital, and I called her to tell her how I'm doing because I'm going to be working on another book for them soon about hearing loss, combined vision and hearing loss. And she said, there needs to be training. There needs to be, take this book and turn it into a workshop. So I don't know, life is short. You can only do so many things, but it's rolling around in my brain because some of the things that I have encountered, people shouldn't have to deal with it. It's just, one other little thing I'll say from the book. There's a section in the book called Blind But Intelligent, and it was prompted by a story that I read in the Braille Monitor years ago about Harold Snyder, who's no longer with us, but who had many advanced degrees, and he was in the hospital, and a friend told him there was a sign above his bed that said blind but intelligent. And I thought that could never really happen. Well, guess what? Last year I was in a hospital in Nevada, and one of my friends told me there was a post-it note on the door that said blind but communicates. There's more about that in the book, like how to deal with it. So,
Deborah, one other comment that I would like to make, too, and I hope you've included this in the book, because this subject is really interesting to me because of my experience with therapists. But I've found that one of the most important things with therapists, and if you ever work with them, I'm sure you will bring this up, is the importance of having a really good positive attitude and an open mind about what people can do, so that if they are intimidated at all by people with disabilities or feel at a loss as to how to treat them, that they can surmount that feeling. Because I found that the most successful therapists I worked with were the people who really felt, yeah, you can do that. Yeah, sure. Yeah, you know, I'll find a way for you to do it. We'll do it.
Yeah, that's very good. Thank you. I'm not sure that I exactly address that, but I completely concur. In fact, I switched physical therapists a year ago because there were two in one facility, and one would say things to me. It wasn't necessarily about blindness. It was about my leg. But she would say, well, you know, I just don't think you're ever going to be able to do that. And the other one would say, anything is possible. You're a hard worker. You'll get there.
Right.
And I thought, you're the one I want on my team.
Absolutely. Thank you, and thank you all for indulging me.
That's amazing. I think we may see a classic being born right here.
Thank you.
Hope so.
Thank you.
I'm excited about it for you, Deborah.
I am too.
Thank you.
Okay, next is Ann Chepetta, and she has several books, and she's going to tell us about some of those.
Hi, everybody. First, I want to say, Deborah, I'm so glad you wrote that book. I'm going to be buying a copy and giving it to all of my doctors. So it's a much-needed shot of education for everybody in the health field. So, anyways. Sure. Okay, so I'm Ann Chepetta, and I want to thank Bonnie and Marilyn and everybody here. And I think this virtual book fair is an excellent idea for all of us to continue getting to know one another and getting our faces and our voices out there. So I guess what I'm going to do is I'm going to probably go backwards, meaning I'm going to do some of the marketing stuff first, and then I'm going to go into and leave you with some readings. So, of course, my website is annchepetta.com, and I spell my name AnnChiappetta. I also have a blog called thought-wheel.com. So that's thought-wheel.com. All of my books are available on Amazon. I'll be ebook sellers and Smashwords. And as I go through my list of books, I'll let you know if there are any additional places where they can be found and what formats they are. I'm interested in making meaningful connections with others through my writing, and that's the main focus and thrust of, you know, when I sit down and I write, I want it to be able to be meaningful to other people, not just me. So I started out with my first book, which is a small chapbook called Upwelling Poems. It's only 60 pages. It has 23 poems. Most of them are fairly short. The poems are about life and relationships, about loss, vision loss, about joyful things like getting my guide dog and being married to my wonderful husband and what that means to me. So it's about the human condition. It's about relationships. It's about being expressive and sharing all of that with other people through my writing. The book is available, like I said, on Amazon. It's also available through Audible as an an audiobook that just happened in the last 6 months. I believe it's $3.99 as an audiobook. And that was very exciting. I had a very, very interesting process of getting it narrated and getting it put up there, but it wasn't as hard as I thought it would be. So also, if anyone is a subscriber or belongs to the Xavier Society, their book loan service, you can get Upwelling in Braille through the Xavier Society for the Blind. My next book was published in 2017, and it's called Follow Your Dog, A Story of Love and Trust, and it's a memoir, and it goes through my life growing up blind and my relationships with each of my pet dogs and how they changed my life and affected me personally, and then leading up to my receiving my first guide dog and how that became a life-changing event for me and my family. Follow Your Dog, A Story of Love and Trust is also on Amazon, and it is also available to the Xavier Society for the Blind in their loan catalog, and it is in process of becoming an audiobook through Audible as we speak. It's being approved now. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that it's going to be ready for the holiday season. So that's very exciting. It's also available through the Bard catalog service through the NLS. And I'm getting to the catalog number. It's DBC 115-82. So you can find it there as well. I haven't gotten Upwelling up on the National Library Services Bard yet, but hopefully will be coming soon. So my current book is called Words of Life, Poems and Essays, and it was just released this past March, 2019. There's over 40 pieces in there, from short poems to nonfiction essays, and it encompasses everything from nature to the human condition. There's pieces in there about there are haiku pieces in there about nature. There are sonnets about walking in the woods and remarking about the meaning of winter. There are also some pieces in there about loss and family. And there's quite a few essays in there also related to being, living my vision and what that means and how it affects me personally. Words of Life for me was almost like cleaning out the files. Like I found that a lot of my writing, over time had kind of gone to the bottom of the pile. So I took a lot of those things that I'd written earlier, brought them to the top and shined them up. And I found that they were hidden jewels that I didn't even know about. I don't know if other writers go through that where they take a manuscript or a poem and they just say, it's not exactly what I want, so I'm going to leave it for a while. And that piece of time could be a month, it could be a year, it could be a couple of years. And then suddenly it's almost like you rediscover it and you say, oh, now I know what I was getting at. I just got to change one or two things and then, wow, I have this beautiful thing. So that's what Words of Life is about. It's like finding pieces that I'd written that just decided to make themselves known. And I think that's the best thing about the creative piece for people who write, is that, we need to be connected to our writing and have meaning so that we can bring meaning to other people and have them appreciate what we write. So I'm going to go right into what I wanted to read. This poem is a sonnet. It was written in 2014 for my son, Anthony. It's called Air Dancing, and it's dedicated to the carousel at Rye Playland Park, which is one of the oldest American carousels in the United States. Under latticed dome abides a steed on brass pole tether. Carnival jewels adorn a saddle of faded leather. Black four songs are performed by Tin Man clad in hose. Seen at a glance, as I walk past, round breezes stirring my clothes. I recreate what age has chased by riding beside my child. Joyful smiles emanate as we prance aloft for miles. Carousel, I knew not your circular deceptions, causing my eyes to tear from windy reflections. I, my child, meek and mild, meshed in imagination, whirling, urging our horses towards unknown destinations. As our ride concludes, we gratefully pat our steeds. This experience, simple and sweet, is all my child needs to transform experiences into memories. The end.
Oh, that's nice.
Thank you. So that's what I was talking about. And that poem was written a while ago, and I had stowed it away, and then I brought it back out and brushed it off, and I realized, wow, this is pretty good. Maybe I'll put it in a book. You know, so that's that. And I guess what I'll do is I'll read a second one. This poem is called The Riding Muscle. I know probably some of you know this poem. I've recited it before, but it is one of my favorites, and it is the introductory poem to Words of Life. So I felt it was apropos. It's called The Riding Muscle. The riding muscle pumps ideas from gray matter. The riding muscle is a narcissist, caring not for other obligations, pouting when ignored. The muscle requires attention, exercise, nurturing. Sometimes it even demands control, like symbiotic partnerships. And then, like the actions demanded by a well-pumped bicep or quadricep, it will tremble with effort and delight, overtake the writer's chore list. Odorous laundry piles ignored, phone calls delayed, and an occasional burnt dinner entree fall victim to the whims of the Schwarzenegger muse. The end.
Thank you, Ann.
You're welcome. So I guess at this point I'll take questions. If not, we can move on to the next person.
Okay. Abby Johnson.
Thank you, everybody.
Abby Johnson Taylor is our next presenter, and she is the president of Behind Our Eyes at this time, and she has several books that she wants to share with us.
Thank you, Marilyn. I'm the author of 5 books. But today, because of the time constraint, I'm only going to talk to you about 4 of them. My most recent is a novel called The Red Press, and it was published in July of 2019 by DLD Books. Here's the synopsis. When Eve went to her high school senior prom, she wore a red dress that her mother had made for her. That night, after dancing with the boy of her dreams, she caught him in the act with her best friend. Months later, Eve, a freshman in college, is bullied into giving the dress to her roommate. After her mother finds out, the relationship is never the same again. 25 years later, Eve, a best-selling author, is happily married with 3 children. Although her mother suffers from dementia, she still remembers, and Eve still harbors the guilt for giving the dress away. When she receives a Facebook friend request from her old college roommate and an invitation to her 25-year high school class reunion, then meets her former best friend by chance, she must confront the past in order to face the future. And this book is available in print and ebook format from Bookshare, and from Bookshare. The next book I'd like to tell you about is a memoir, My Ideal Partner, How I Met, Married, and Cared for the Man I Loved, Despite Debilitating Odds. This book was published in 2016, also by DLD Books. In September of 2005, Abby Johnson married Bill Taylor. She was in her mid-40s, and he was 19 years older. 3 months later, Bill suffered the first of 2 strokes that paralyzed his left side and confined him to a wheelchair. Abby Johnson Taylor, once a registered music therapist, uses prose and poetry to tell the story of how she met and married her husband, then cared for him for 6 years despite her visual impairment. At first, there was a glimmer of hope that Bill would walk again. But when therapists gave up on him 7 months after his second stroke, Taylor resigned herself to being a permanent family caregiver. She discusses learning to dress him and transfer him from one place to another, sitting up with him at night when he couldn't urinate or move his bowels, and dealing with doctors and bureaucrats to obtain necessary equipment and services. There were happy times, like when she played the piano or guitar and sang his favorite song, or when they went out to eat or to a concert. She also explained how she purchased a wheelchair-accessible van and found people to drive it, so they wouldn't always depend on the local paratransit service's limited hours. In the end, she describes the painful decision she and Bill made to move him to a nursing home when he became too weak for her to care for him in September of 2012. He seemed to give up on life and passed away a month later. This book is available in print and ebook formats from Bookshare. And if you can get NLS cartridges, your Talking Book Library should be able to get it from the Utah State Library. The next book I'll tell you about is a poetry collection, That's Life, New and Selected Poems. This was published in 2014 by Finishing Line Press. Life happens. As a teenager, you're told you can't go to the mall because your aunt from out of town is visiting, and the family is planning a trip to see the Nutcracker. As an adult, you hear news on the radio about an airport bombing in Los Angeles. Your husband suffers a debilitating stroke, and you spend the last 6 years of his life caring for him at home. Not all of the poems in this book are about tragedies. Some are humorous, others serious. Topics range from school to love to death and everything in between. This book is available in print and ebook formats from Amazon and other sources, and from Bookshare. The last book I'll tell you about today is another poetry collection called How to Build a Better Mousetrap: Recollections and Reflections of a Family Caregiver. This was published in 2011 by iUniverse. In January of 2006, Abby Johnson Taylor's husband suffered a stroke that left him paralyzed on his left side. After months of therapy in a nursing facility, he returned home in September of that year. Although he still had little use of his left arm and leg, it was hoped that through outpatient therapy, he would eventually walk again. In January of 2007, he suffered a second stroke that wasn't as severe, but it was enough to impact his recovery. In August of that year, his therapy was discontinued because he showed no progress. He has never walked since. The first five poems tell the story of how Taylor found her husband when he suffered his first stroke, detail events in the first few months afterward, and describe Taylor and her husband's reactions. The rest of the poems in the first part were inspired by Taylor's experiences while caring for her husband. Covering such topics as dressing, feeding, toileting, their relationship, and his computer, they often provide a humorous outlook. Some poems are from the husband's point of view. Poems in the next two parts cover childhood memories and other topics. The last section of the poems was inspired by Taylor's 15 years of experience as a registered music therapist in a nursing home before marrying her husband. And this book is available in print and ebook format from Amazon and other sources and from Bookshare, and you Talking Book users should be able to get it, your library should be able to get it from the Utah State Library. And if you would like to learn more about me and all my books, you can visit my website at http://www.abbyjohnsontaylor.com. And that's ABBIEJOHNSONTAYLOR.com. Again, that's http://www.abbyjohnsontaylor.com. And I believe we have time for questions.
You do, too.
Any questions?
Abby, I'm curious, just since we have little time here, to know which type of writing you find most challenging. You've written poetry, novels, memoirs. Do you get into each type as you're writing it, and so therefore it's maybe easier because you're really into doing that particular type of book, or do you find one particular genre more challenging than the others?
I think that writing fiction is more challenging because I'm having to, unlike with a memoir where I know what happens and I just have to write it down, with a fiction I have to devise the story. And sometimes that can be more difficult than writing nonfiction or poetry.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Well, our last participant, but she is certainly not the least, is Marilyn Brandt Smith. I would just like to say that when she wrote her book, Chasing the Green Sun, she gave me the honor of reading an audio version of that book, which she may or may not talk about, and I'm not expecting her to. I am only mentioning it because she, in having me read that, fulfilled a dream for me, in giving me the opportunity for a little while to be a narrator. And I thank her for that. I give you Marilyn Brandt Smith.
Hi, everybody, again. Okay, my book is Chasing the Green Sun. The subtitle is Quick Fictions, Seasonal Rhythms, and Personal Echoes. I'm saying that softly so I won't trigger my Amazon device. Okay. My book is multi-genre, as you can tell by the subtitle. I'm going to start out a little differently from the others because I'm going to read to you first. I'm going to read a humorous piece from December. My book is organized like a calendar. And, of course, toward the end, we usually want happy memories of December. And this is one of the good ones from it. Yes, Bonnie read my book, and I read this one because I had previously recorded it with a musical background. So I read this one and a couple of others in my book. I'll talk more about my book when I finish reading this poem, but I'm going to start out with it. It's called The Christmas Mouse. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring except for one little mouse. So white and so fat and so proud to be free, everyone else was celebrating, so why shouldn't he? He knew about those Twinkies, a treat most forbidden, and he knew exactly where they'd been hidden. Careful he must be, or a trap might beset him, or poison that smelled just like candy could get him. To the top of the counter, the top of the fridge, across that old vent hood, what a wonderful bridge. All right, there they are on the microwave shelf, and he ate one whole Twinkie in spite of himself. Away with the paper, can't leave any sign. Good shot, hit the trash can, everything should be fine. Oh no, what was that? A trap got my tail. I can't die on Christmas, he started to wail. He cried and he tried, to get free. If they find me tomorrow, I'm past history. Why'd I eat that whole Twinkie? Gosh, I'm feeling yucky. And if that cat should come in, man, I'm one sitting ducky. He grew very thoughtful with the rooster's first song. His mama had warned him, son, you've got to be strong if you're going to survive in this cat and mouse world. You've got to make choices. With his mind in a whirl, all of a sudden, he knew what to do. Okay, good buddy, how fast can you chew? It's going to be painful, and you're going to look frail. But I'd rather be ugly than to die for my tail. He gnawed and he gnawed, couldn't rest even a minute. It was a struggle for his life, and he just had to win it. The big clock struck 7, and then, sure enough, with a grin between his whiskers, in wandered Fluff. With a desperate jerk, he leaped to the sink. I better make tracks for my nest, don't you think? It's under the freezer where a cat can't retrieve it. Too bad about my tail. I just had to leave it. Now, don't think too badly about this mouse who looks odd without that pipe cleaner at the end of his bod. He's a real hero. Detailed, but a winner. For a while there, he was sure to be the cat's Christmas dinner. You can help by hiding all that junk food next year. After all, you might save him some toes or an ear. The end of that poem. That was fun. It really was a fun, fun poem to write. Okay, my book is mixed genre. As I said, it's organized into 12 chapters based on the months. And we start each chapter with 2 haiku. One is based on the moons, as the Native Americans would have lived those times. And the second one is based on, we call it sunshine, or the way we might live it today. The chapters also end in a similar way. There's a poem connected called Crossings, and they're about people crossing usually water for one or another reasons. The February one, for instance, is a little four-line poem about Eliza crossing the ice from Uncle Tom's Cabin. March features the Irish famine and the people having to come to the U.S. April, we talk about the Titanic sinking. Later on, there's stories about covered wagons going across difficult rivers and Indian maidens crossing with the canoe to get herbs. In the current day of our immigration things, there's one chapter about tying children to the inner tube so they can get across the Rio Grande. So that's sort of the way those endings of chapters go. There's a few disability pieces in each chapter, and there's always a couple of short stories, one of which has 100 or less words. That's called flash fiction. And that's because I was participating in a project on the internet where we had one posted every day. I managed to get one up there about once a month. It was a real challenge and quite a lesson in editing to cut those words. There are memoir within each chapter about love, loss, fear, adventure, not only in my life, but in the lives of some of my friends. There's a sci-fi story about colonizing the moon, another fictional story about a murder plot set in Alaska. I write about my experience, my first job teaching in the Dominican Republic as a first Blind Peace Corps volunteer. My husband and I write about our experience with guide dogs. It was 5 at the time we wrote that. Now it is 6. And we also wrote about experiences in our motorhome with various drivers and over the years. One piece, it's called You Can't Skip the Scary Stuff. It's kind of a conversation and kind of a writing lesson. Bonnie brought to me some of her memoirs and essays in about 2006 that she wanted me to look over. She knew I was editing the first Behind Our Eyes anthology, and she wanted me to see. And so part of it is my critique of her work, telling her, reach for more, reach for more. Part of it is our sharing the experiences that she went through with the loss of her partner and a house fire and all the other things that turn our worlds upside down. And a lot of it was her telling me of her dreams, what she wanted to do with writing and reading, and my challenge for her to just keep going. You're on the right track. And, of course, she did, and she still is. Several other authors cooperated with some stories. Valerie Moreno, Robert Feinstein, Nancy Scott. And I was inspired by the work of one of our authors, Elizabeth Fioriti, to write a little flash fiction story called Big Night at Blue Burgers. And that's kind of a funny one. But what about that title? I know you're wondering, The Green Sun? Where did that come from? Well, my son and I have congenital glaucoma. So some lights, including those old fluorescent tubes you probably saw on the ceilings of your classrooms, and unfortunately the moon, look green to us. No matter when or what, they look green. So one New Year's Eve, we were out on the balcony with my son. Well, I'll just let you read the story to see what he said and what made it so funny. He gave me the title to my book in 1984 when neither one of us had any idea there ever would be a book. Okay, you can buy the book from Amazon, Chasing the Green Sun. You can get it on Kindle, or you can find it on Bookshare, or you can read it as read by Bonnie with a few pieces read by me. Go to Marilyn's Pages. It's all written together, MarilynsPages.com, and you can download it from there and read it. And I hope that you have found something tonight that will inspire you to buy a book, read a book, download a book, or that you perhaps have heard enough tonight that you would want to join us and become one of us, you can go to the BehindOurEyes.org website and bring down the membership form or the contact form and ask more questions. And that's all I have to say. If anyone has any questions about my book, I'll be glad, and I apologize for the glitch.
That's all right.
Well, Marilyn, this is Deborah, and I just want to say how much I love, love, love the mouse poem. It's awesome. And I was really, I was struggling because I was still unmuted. I had unmuted myself when it was my turn, and I hadn't muted again. And I was really, I was choking because I wanted to giggle. It's so good. I love it.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Yes, Marilyn, this is Carrie, and I loved your mouse poem, too. That made me laugh. That was cute. And eating the Twinkie. And, well, that was wonderful.
Thank you.
This is Kate. I had the pleasure of working with Marilyn on that book, and it always delighted me and surprised me what came next.
Yes. It's always different.
Yes, Kate's one of our faithful editors.
Anyone else?
Okay, I'll turn it back over to you, Bonnie.
Okay. I don't think that anybody ever imagined when Behind Our Eyes had its beginning that we would ever be in a place, and I wasn't part of this group back then, where we would have an afternoon and early evening like this. For me and for all of you, I'm sure, there's no greater pleasure in the world than sitting down with a good book and taking time to read and reflect and laugh because you're entertained. For me, anyway, there is no greater love. And I hope that for those of you who listen to the recording and for those of you who have attended and participated as authors today, that you will find books by others and have found books by others that you would like to get for yourself or for people you love and care about. I am of the belief that there is no greater gift you can give than someone's words and a book they've written. There is no greater pleasure than spending an afternoon like this. And I could never consider anything that I've ever done that is about books work. It's a pure and true pleasure. There is something wonderful about witnessing and hearing the creativity of other people as we've done this afternoon. And I hope that for all of you listening that you're excited about what we've done today and that you'll go out there and support the authors you've heard tell us about their work by buying and enjoying their books. And I want to thank everyone who attended today, both participants and authors who did presentations. It's been a wonderful, entertaining afternoon in which many things were shared, and I thank all of you for taking the time and going to such extraordinary effort to put a presentation together and follow the rules we gave you. It's been splendid. I've enjoyed it, and I hope all of you have too. And thank you for being here and for being part of this.
Thank you all. And
thank you, Bonnie and Marilyn, both of you putting this together. This was a wonderful presentation. I guess I shouldn't say too much more.
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
On the recording.
If there's any other questions, it's fine.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it was. It really was.
Truly fun.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, everyone.
Next Sunday
we'll
be doing a critique next Sunday on the 17th. Start
and then
writing.
Tomorrow's the workshop. Don't forget.
Oh yes, that's right, Joan's.
Tomorrow night is the Reader's Workshop, and it's hosted by Ann Chiappetta. So bring your piece to read or come ready to listen. It's a lovely time and a comfortable place to share work.
And that's
it's
also
at 8 o'clock.
Thing that didn't start to happen until recently, right, Joan?
Yeah, but
less than a year.
When you think of where we were and how things develop and where we are now, I think it's totally right and appropriate to congratulate ourselves a little bit on what we accomplish and what we continue to do, because all of this happens because people are dedicated and continue their efforts in the writing craft, and it's certainly well appreciated.
That's right.
Well, and it's such a wonderful, this group is such a wonderful support in a community, and I really cherish it for that.
Okay.
So thank you for...
Thanks, everybody, and good night.
Thank you.
Being there.
Good night.
Thanks, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.